The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Welcome to The Money Show this Friday evening. The Money Show is brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, providing solutions that can numbers into tangible business solutions at this year's APSA Beyond the Budget Dialogue. Now that's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Welcome to the show this evening. We'll go through till 8 o'clock. We've got the best bits of the week, and we'll bring those to you just between 7 and 8 this evening, including a fabulous book review with Ian Mann from Gateway's Business Consultants, all about the founder of Netflix, Reed Hastings, and just the extraordinarily clear and deliberate culture that exists within that company, and which has caused it to be a massive global disruptor. Just how much of a disruptor will Aspen Pharmacare be in the fight to provide vaccines? Stephen Saad, Chief Executive of Aspen, standing by. We'll chat to him. Find out from Gary McNamara why South Africa is struggling to sell bonds in the bond auctions. I mean, to simplify it, why nobody wants to lend us money. That's a concern. We'll talk to Marlies Wallace, who is the founder of Mies. It's a luxury body and skin care range. And wrap it all up this evening on the first half of the show with the Brutal Biz Quiz. That's all tonight on The Money Show.
You're with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Load shedding, as you heard in Eyewitness News, extended to 11 p.m. on Sunday. So far, they told us it was going to 11 tonight, but there have been more breakages at Kriel, Mudupi, isn't that new? And Kendall power stations, resulting in the generation units being taken offline for various faults. And emerging risks at various other power stations have contributed to the constraints. The network is broken, Uncle Gweezy. Get some new generation capacity in quickly. You would think that a medicines manufacturer would be thriving in a pandemic, but the same as hospital groups that have seen a collapse in discretionary surgeries and hospital stays, drugs makers have also been hit because you've been buying fewer lotions and potions and things that you might buy if you were out and about in a normal course of business. This may change, though, as we see the global ramp up in vaccine manufacturing taking shape. And of course, Aspen Pharmacare has got a contract with Johnson & Johnson, which has got a very good vaccine offering around the world, and it's increasingly getting its approvals around the globe. Aspen Chief Executive Stephen Saad joins us on the line from KZN this evening, where Aspen Pharmacare is based. Stephen Saad, just how long will it take the first J&J vaccine to roll off a South African production line?
We're in the technology transfer phase, and that's what we announced last. And you'll see in these results, we have said that we expect commercial sales in our year, which is between now and June. So everything depends on the results, how they pan out, how the regulators do it. But we've done particularly well. We may be one of the top performers, if not the top performer, within the J&J manufacturing network. So really positive for Aspen, very positive for Africa and South Africa too, of course. So so in the next couple of months, we expect these products to be rolling off, and you know that puts us into a really good position. I'm talking not only commercially, I mean I'm talking really about as a country.
How long would it take you to get to the million doses a day, which you've previously told us you would manage to produce? I mean, you'll get the first the first doses off the lines by the end of your financial year, so by June. How long would it take to ramp up to that million a day?
By then we should be close. You know, we've got capacity probably closer to 300 or just over 300 million, which is just under a million a day. But I mean, it could possibly get to a million a day. But let's face it, even if we got to half of that today, it's more than we could ever use. So it really is a good position. I mean, our capacities are probably about 300 million. So if that is what J&J order from us, you know, you've got only 40 million people to order for in South Africa. So there's plenty of capacity and really a big contribution. We really hope that our stock, which is decided, you know, allocation decided obviously in negotiation with government and J&J, But we're hoping that, you know, our stock not only goes here, but to the rest of Africa as well.
Now, can we, I mean, how much can you tell us at this stage, Stephen, about the vaccine that you make in your Port Elizabeth and East London factories? Are we, as a country, entitled to first dibs at those vaccines, or is there a very complex global process that has to be followed?
You know, it's a very tricky situation for us because we effectively are the manufacturer of the vaccine on behalf of J&J. So there's a negotiation to be held between South Africa and the government. But look, just think about it practically. J&J, one of the reasons we picked J&J was that they had an absolute commitment to emerging markets. They talked about giving at least 500 million doses, and that was very consistent with what we had hoped for. They also were very, you did their clinical trials in South Africa, and they picked the South African manufacturer as one of the leading manufacturers globally. So I think that South Africa has got to be in an excellent position if you're sitting to be able to access those capacities and capabilities. I don't think that they would have done all of this if that wasn't accessible to government. But I think, and I heard the Minister of Health mentioning as much. So, you know, from an Aspen perspective, all we've done is put our heads down and make sure that we get this vaccine out and we can make it, because every day counts. But I think the capacities that we are going to provide and capabilities put South Africa in an unbelievably strong position to look after their own people.
I mean, it's so important because it would be insane to have these vaccines round-tripped, manufactured in South Africa, put onto aeroplanes, flown to a central distribution point, then finally distributed back to South Africa. It would be completely illogical to do so. But it is something that is out of your hands, because you've taken a fair amount of flack for not negotiating a deal to make sure that we all get our doses first before any vaccines leave South Africa. Explain, please, to me the relationship between the owners of the vaccine, that's Johnson & Johnson, who are paying you a fee to use your manufacturing capacity. This is not your product, right?
Exactly. It's not our product. And so, you know, when you say we take back, at the end of the day, we could sit with Johnson & Johnson and say we want to sell everything in South Africa. But then South Africa have got to want to buy it. They've got to want to pay it. They've got to agree the terms and terminologies. So we sit behind between two very big companies. But there's clear commitment. There's obviously very clear discussions between J&J. And J&J have been incredibly committed. Just look at what they did. I mean, just to start what we called our rollout, they provided us with clinical trial stock. Just to get that stock into this country when there's demand elsewhere shows their absolute commitment to South Africa. Gotcha. You know, there's a lot that I can't say and I won't say, but, you know, I'm happy to say that South Africa is in a brilliant position.
It's a good product as well. I mean, we are hearing reports today of three new variants that have been found, one in Cape Town and two other places in the country. This is the nature of a virus. There is this mutation that happens, and that's how viruses survive and spread. Clearly, the sooner we get doses into the market and the sooner we get needles in arms, the better.
Absolutely. And, you know, you talk about new variants. You know, there's ability right now, if you've got a flu vaccine in South Africa, they tweak them each year, so they change them. And it will be no different here as well. We won't need new registration. As long as it's not a new strain, but a variant, which is a variance on what we currently have. So, that process of development is relatively quick. So, you know, but you want to, as you say, get the shot in the arm as quickly as possible, just in case we find something that doesn't respond to one of the vaccines.
Exactly. I mean, it really is. It's a race against time. As Aspen, you've been very, very focused over the past couple of years in cutting as much debt as possible. You've sold off businesses to raise capital in that way. Talk to me about the progress that you're making on that front.
So there's a couple of areas. We really fine-tuned our business to sort of play to our strengths, see what we had. You know, we've made acquisitions. Where do we want to be strong? Where don't we? We've got a great distribution platform. And that distribution platform has shown some really good growth, some nice, good, strong organic growth, which we're happy with. And then we've got the sterile platform. And that sterile platform has been something we've worked really hard on. It's what we make the vaccine. And if you look at what it gives us above our own anesthetics and other injectables, we've got probably about 800 million doses that we could use. So, you know, there's some of that's going to be used for COVID vaccines, but we've got a lot of the 800 million, you multiply it by any number, even a small number, it becomes a very big area of profitability for us if we are able to utilize those capacities. In terms of the debt, this time last 2 years ago, you remember when we spoke, Bruce, we had 54 billion rand of debt. Right as we speak today, we have 27 billion. So we've halved it. There's another 7 billion coming in June, which is the balance of a payment due to us. So that gets us close to 20 billion. And, you know, considering we make over 10 billion of EBIT, debt is an absolute non-issue within the Aspen environment. And that's why we were very comfortable to say we'll be declaring a dividend this year, et cetera. So, yeah, all positive on that front.
I mean, are you feeling a lot more confident now and a lot more comfortable? Because there was a point where things were beginning to look a little bit hairy. It felt like perhaps Aspen had bitten off more than it could chew.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, it's very hard if you're an entrepreneurial company in a public environment. Remember, we don't take any, we have never asked the shareholders for cash. So everything is done on debt. But we had an absolute vision that our vision was very clear. We wanted to become a global sterile player. To do that, we had to make some big acquisitions of products to rationalize a capacity build that we required. I always said the products were relatively irrelevant. It was the capacity and capability. And we saw the opportunity for vaccines. I'm not saying it was for COVID. We saw an opportunity, and we built our facilities, not just for sterile products, but for vaccine manufacture as well. What did happen, as it turned out, is that we made anesthetics for the world. I had heads of state in Europe phoning me personally to see that they got their share of our production. I mean, there's a little Aspen having to supply all of Europe. Then we had dexamethasone, and we were in the front of the queue there too in terms of COVID. And now the COVID vaccine, which we're a part of. And now we've got all this extra capacity. So we had a vision. Yes, we. It was a stretch to deliver the vision, but I think what we're demonstrating now is not only have we got a great strategy that's going to roll out over the next few years and give us longevity for a long time, a long, long time to come. But, you know, maybe we were right in our assessment then, but of course, make those type of.
And we've lost him. Stephen Sard, thank you. Chief Executive at Aspen Pharmacare. Some very encouraging noises coming out of Stephen Sard this evening in terms of vaccine rollouts and South Africa's ability to access the vaccines that will be manufactured in the Eastern Cape.
702.
Bruce is on The Money Show.
Now, you know, it's bloomin' hard to get to the Olympics. It's hard to get to any sort of level in sport. But to get to the Olympics, you've got to be at the very, very pinnacle of your game. And it's not, it's hard enough cracking a nod to get to the Olympics without having to worry about how to pay for it. But that is a problem facing the South African hockey team. And Gareth Ewing is coach of the South African hockey team. Just what are you looking for here, Gareth? Because you've got a couple of months to go to get to Japan for the 2020 Olympics, and you're racing against time in terms of funding.
Yeah, Bruce, very much so. When we talk about the Olympics, it's not just those 2 or 3 weeks that you're actually there. It's the preparation phase that you've got to go through as well. And now with the world very slowly opening up again after all coming towards the end of COVID, we hope, we've got to find the opportunities to train and play against the opponents to prepare. And that's really one of our biggest financial challenges.
Talk to me about why it is so hard for hockey to raise funding, because it's one of those sports that is incredibly fun to watch if you like it, but it doesn't bring the crowds like golf or cricket or rugby or soccer, for example.
Look, it is interesting, and of course I'm obviously a little bit biased towards the game, but you know, there are 250,000 odd people who play hockey in this country across every single demographic. So, you know, it's a good market, and there are people who come and watch, but it is very much the people who play and who know the game who come out and watch us play. You know, we get a good TV audience, especially when we are playing in India or being broadcast in India, but I think the local market still needs to learn a little bit about us.
Now, how are you going to raise the funding? What are you doing?
Look, that's a good question, because it's a huge challenge, and, you know, the sponsorship space at the moment is difficult. And then sometimes I think our value proposition is not that easy to sell to people. But we partnered with an organization called matchkit.co, which you can obviously find online. And we're looking at a crowdfund at the moment. There's no doubt it's a bit of a Hail Mary, to be honest. But we do think that the publicity we've generated from it and the conversations that have started are definitely going to help us move in the right direction towards a sponsor. Is it going to solve our problems in the short term? I'm not so sure about that, but we're working really hard, and we're very confident that we're going to raise the funds we need between now and Tokyo.
How good are you? What are the prospects for the team? I mean, when you compare the way, I mean, South African hockey has been strong for years, but I mean, are you a medals contender potentially?
We would consider ourselves to be in the elite in the world, which is ranked, anybody ranked inside the top 15. So we are ranked 14. That ranking will tell you that a medal is not beyond the realm of possibility, but it will be a bit of a long shot. Our big priority is to get out of the initial pool. Once we get into the medal round, anything can happen. For me as a coach, it's Tokyo is a huge opportunity for us to build towards the World Cup in 2023. And then on to Paris. And it's, we've got to see these things as part of a process and part of an investment in the future success.
So there's short-term money that's needed. I mean, in the short term, to get you to Tokyo, how much do you need?
$3.5 million will pay most of our costs. I still won't get any salary for what I do, but I can live with that for now, as long as we can cover our players' costs. That's to help us get to some preparation tournaments. And also to train at home.
Okay, if anybody wants to help you, how do they put 50 cents into your fundraising?
The best thing to do is to get hold of me or my team on social media. If you follow me on Instagram, that's probably your best spot. You can catch me at Springdog, which is my tag. And you'll see all of the links to all of our crowd funds. And you can get hold of us through matchkit.co.
Matchkit.co at Springdog on Instagram. I wish you luck with it, Gareth Ewing, the coach of the South African hockey team. I certainly hope they manage to get there. One of the top hockey teams in the world looking for help to get to Tokyo in a very, very tough environment.
702.
Bruce is on the Money Show.
Now, Gary McNamara at Sunlum Private Wealth, are you on Zoom this evening? I don't have a message on my screen telling me that you are, but I'm assuming that the gods of the Money Show are on site. No, they're not. So we'll get hold of Gary McNamara in a moment. Coming up in the second half hour of the show tonight, Marlies Wallace, the founding owner of Miss Brody, Body Products on our Friday file. Looking forward to catching up with Marlies because she is an ex-pop star. Very big fan, very big name in Stellenbosch. And then a couple of things happened which took her in a completely different direction. It's a lovely story. And then play the Brutal Biz quiz in between 7 and 8. Of course, best bits of The Money Show from the week that has been.
The Money Show.
The markets.
What on earth, Gary McNamara at Sunlum Private Wealth, is going on with Tencent in China, which is causing havoc for Naspers and Prosus, which in turn dragged the JSE to a bumpy red end today?
Yeah, Bruce, I'll sum it up. The governments don't like competition. I think it's a control factor. So there's always been a risk with these large IT companies that dominate their space, be it e-commerce or gaming, where government, you know, they do try and regulate. And I think it's the case of government getting involved. They feel Tencent's too dominating. We saw it with Alibaba late last year as well when they wanted to do the ant listing. So it's not new. And unfortunately, it is a risk that you run with all these big companies, the Googles, the Microsofts, with governments wanting to try and control the dominance that they do have in their relevant markets.
How about this play out? Because this is dramatic for the JSE. We are far too dependent as a market, especially if you're an index investor, far too dependent on the weight of Tencent within Naspers and Prosus. Of course, this could be one of these things that sort of blows up and blows over, as it is wont to do, but it is unsettling.
Absolutely, Bruce, and I think you make a very valid point that you've just got to be very careful with the growth in tracker markets that you understand your exposure to the underlying. So you make the point, Naspers dominates the local market, if you add the Naspers and the process together, you know, you're well north of 20% exposure. So, you know, you might feel like you're getting a diversified index, but you are actually getting quite a lot of risk in that company. I think it's a good company. We like the story. Just 20% is quite high in one single share.
Yeah, and that is the problem with the top 40 on the JSE, the dominance there. But there have been a bunch of really lovely moves this week, really strong moves. And I think most notable this week, other than Massmart, which has had a surprisingly good run, has been MTN, which has ended the week over 85 Rand a share. You wouldn't have bet that necessarily at the beginning of the week, and certainly not as they came out and said, sorry, no dividend. It took a while for the market to come round to MTN's way of thinking.
Absolutely, Bruce. I definitely would have been surprised given that they withheld their dividend. But if you look at it operationally with their results, they actually did very well across all their geographies. The one uncertainty that you really see is their ability to get their cash out of Nigeria. But if you take that out of it and you take the Nigerian space away from them, they're still worth quite a lot outside of Nigeria. We would probably value the share close to where they're trading now, excluding Nigeria. So you are getting some sort of free option on Nigeria, which has been the noose around their neck for quite a long time. But I would like to think that they will find some common ground. But it's been a great week for MTN, and it's got quite a good cash flow. And I guess the risk is that they've got the debt at their holding company, and that's why they held the dividend. But I thought their set of results this week were great.
And Stephen Saad and Aspen Pharmacare. I mean, it's an extraordinary story of an Umhlanga headquartered business really being quite a big gorilla in the world of global drugs and vaccine manufacture.
Absolutely, Bruce, and it's a great opportunity from a South African perspective. Hopefully we can get some of the offtake. But, you know, it just talks to the world-class operating infrastructure that they've got in their plants in PE and East London, that they can actually compete on a World Health Organization standard. And I think it's fantastic, and it's great kudos to the company, and it's a feather in South Africa's cap.
Yeah, no, they've done incredibly well. Not so good this week has been the attempt by the South African government to place bonds in the market. The way countries raise money is that they say, right, we will pay X percent for anybody who lends us money, and people come in and buy the bonds or don't buy the bonds. And I mean, our bonds have been in huge demand during 2020 because our yield, the return people could get on the bond or countries could get on the bond, it was so high. But now we look at it, and this week, massively undersubscribed. We couldn't sell our bonds in an environment where foreigners have been big sellers of South African bonds.
Yes, Bruce, and it's an interesting dynamic because, as you say, our yields are very attractive. If you look at like a 10-year bond as a fixed deposit, you're getting, you know, 9.5% from the government, a government guarantee, where inflation would normally be the drivers or the risk of the bond holder, and our inflation's fairly benign. It's 3%. So you would be getting over a 6% real yield in our bond market. And as you say, on the face of it, everybody should be jumping into these bonds where you almost get a guaranteed 9.5% over the next 10 years. I think the problem that the market's got is the credibility of the government and the fiscus. You know, they've promised quite a lot of cost cutting over a long period of time. And, you know, even with the budget, you know, there's quite a lot that they've got to get right in terms of cost cutting. And to date, they've really battled to get that right. And their debt levels continue to go up. You know, we were at 80%. Debt to GDP, the COVID issue didn't help the government fiscal situation, and we are getting into the risk of a debt spiral from a South African perspective. The one positive thing is we are very South African focused in terms of our debt, meaning that a lot of the bonds are rand denominated, as opposed to Argentina, that maybe is a recent example of somebody that's defaulted, they had a lot of dollar debt, whereas South Africa has got rand debt, so the government can manage it a little bit better, but I think it's really a case of government credibility where they're not cutting the costs in the short term. We've also seen the 10-year bond in America, which has been a talking point for the last month or so, actually going up quite sharply from under 1% to 1.63. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it does push up the cost of capital for a lot of corporations, which has an impact. But I think the overriding factor in our market is just the credibility from a government cost-cutting point of view.
Gary McNamara from Sanlam Private Wealth. Thank you for fabulous insights on this Friday evening.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Unpacking data-driven insights and analysis to turn numbers into tangible business solutions at this year's Absa Beyond the Budget Dialogue. Now that's Africanacity. Absa's a registered FSP.
Among the best bits on tonight's Money Show between 7 and 8 is the fabulous review that Ian Mann from Gateway's Business Consultants did all about the book Into Netflix, Reed Hastings' biography Into Netflix, and just how Netflix has changed the world, possibly and probably forever, and certainly disrupted a very powerful industry, and that is the industry of the video shop. There are a couple still left. I wonder for how much longer. On the next Money Show, the chief executive of SA Tourism, C. Sutton Chon, Other People's Money. He'll join us to talk about first jobs, early money mistakes, and what it's like trying to manage a tourism entity in a pandemic. We'll talk about African energy. There's a new book, Billions at Play, The Future of African Energy and Doing Deals. Sounds fascinating. Also, all of the big money stories of the day, looking at results also from Sun International and Stadio, the university business. All of that is coming up next time on The Money Show.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
Friday File is what we open up at this time every single week. And we look into the world of creativity, of small businesses, of craftspeople. People are doing interesting things. And tonight, Marlies Wallace, who is the founding owner of Mies Body Products. And you called it Mies because, Marlies, those who know you best call you Mies, so you named it after yourself.
Yes, I guess so. Hello, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
You were part of a girl band. I mean, this has got the makings of a decent story. Do tell us about the girl band and how that morphed into a TV show that you went on to, and you had to do some cooking and it ended up being beauty products. I'm summarizing awfully. Why don't you tell us the full story?
Yes, can you believe it? I actually studied drama for 4 years, and my agent asked me to if I wanted to audition for a girl band, and I actually said no in the beginning. And then 6 months later, they had to get a new member, and so I thought, you know, let me go and audition for this. I don't really like Afrikaans music, although I am Afrikaans, but I grew up with jazz. But let me go and do this. And then I heard the music, and I was like, wow, this is actually pretty cool. Can you hear me?
We can. We can. You're dropping off for a little bit, but we hear you. We hear you. We hear you.
Oh, okay. Sorry. And anyway, long story short, I was in an Afrikaans girl band called Shine 4. And we traveled all across the country. It was amazing. We performed for royalty. And then, we had to be chefs on Beitzaker on Cake Night. And they asked us to make food. And I thought, I'm going to make food for your skin. But I had absolutely no idea what I was thinking. But I was in my kitchen and I couldn't find a proper body scrub. And I thought, you know what? The sugar is actually quite coarse. So sugar you can eat. So if I put it on my skin, it should be okay. And olive oil you can eat. So that should be okay in my skin. And I looked at my garden. I saw lavender and roses. And I thought, well, you can eat that as well because you can have rose jam and lavender on your tarts. So why not put it in this little mixture? And I made it and it was absolutely divine. And we were asked to be on this show and I...
So sorry, they say, come and make food and you make a body scrub, an edible body scrub.
Yes, because it's food for your skin.
Yeah, I know this. I understand the concept, but I mean, that was a pretty gutsy thing to do. First off, especially as you have got absolutely no clue on how to make beauty products. Not one single slightest idea.
And can I remind you, this was in the year 2003, and I did not know Google. I don't think even I had a laptop at that stage. So we did not Google. I went to sit on my bum in a pharmacy with a chart of essential oils that I had to zoom through and see which oils are good for circulation and which is good for this and which is good for that. And I put whatever was good for circulation. I thought, I'm going to take these 5 oils and I'm going to put it in my scrub and it's going to smell nice and it's going to look good with a ribbon. And so I really had no idea what I was doing, but little did I know what a blessing it would be in the future. So we made this on TV. I've still got a videotape, like a VHS.
Have you got a machine to play it on? Because, I mean, it's fine to have the videotape, but do you have a machine to play it on? Yeah, exactly.
No. That's the problem. I've got to find somebody that can convert it for me. But now what? On a DVD? No, because I don't have a DVD player anymore. Exactly. So I don't know what I'm going to do with that.
Maybe no, they'll make you a digital file. They'll make you a digital file. You'll put it on YouTube and your children will laugh at you in perpetuity. Now, when you make the scrub and you put sugar in it to give you the nice roughness, because so many of these bloomin' commercial products are full of these little plastic pellets that are clogging up the oceans and choking the fish. Surely when you do something like that, you get a horrible sticky residue. I mean, how did you know the proportions and the balance and knowing that you can put sugar into something like that to give you the texture that you want to do the exfoliation, but you don't want it to feel like you've just walked through Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Exactly. So I really did not know what I was doing. And I always say this is God's recipe. It's not mine because I had no clue what I was doing. I knew how to hold the mic and how to sing in it. So the amazing thing with the olive oil is almost like a preservative. So it does not make it sticky, but you do need to rinse it off. You cannot just scrub and walk around because then it will be sticky, but you're not sticky when you're actually scrubbing. And the olive oil preserves it. This I only found out later. We actually went on with a girl band and then I started making the scrubs for friends and then somebody started to order it from me. And I was like, what if somebody dies? Because I work with essential oils and that is like medicine that can be quite potent. So I took the step in sending my body scrub to a laboratory. It was actually a spa in Joburg and they've got a lab and it was there for 3 months. And then 3 months later, this man phones me and he says, listen, yeah, we've just, your scrub has been through all of the tests. I just want to know, where's your factory? And I say, no, I'm actually in a girl band. So I made the scrub in my kitchen. And he said, okay, but what machinery do you use? And I said, a bowl and a spoon. And he says, where did your flowers come from? And I said, from my garden. And he said, lady, I don't know who you are, but this product is a product with a purpose and it is very good ingredients. And that is literally the birth of this entire business that has grown. Yeah, it's amazing.
So I take it you hung up your microphone. Are you still, you're still doing girl band stuff or is this your full, take your full attention?
At this stage, it really does take my full attention. I've got a 9-year-old daughter called Juliet, so she is my biggest fan. We love singing together. I'm still very much in contact with the Shine 4 girls. We actually had a couple of days together in December with our families, and we love each other dearly. My dad is in he's got his own jazz band and for all seasons. And last year, the year before, actually, I sang with them at a very fantastic wedding in Cape Town in a library. And my heart sank into my tummy. I haven't done it in so many years. So I was not that confident, but it was such a joy. You know, once you do it, it's just, I'm sure you feel the same. You might be nervous, but once you sit in front of that mic, all your nervousness just disappears and you just feel so at home.
It's lovely to have that as the hobby, but this is the business. We're talking about the business now of Mies, which is the body and skin care range that you've developed. Now, you've been doing it for 10 years. You started your distribution through markets. Markets are great because you get immediate customer feedback, don't you? And you would have learned, I think, a lot from that process of seeing your customers eye to eye.
Absolutely. You know, platforms like Commerce Fall or Commerce Makers, they give this amazing platform to all local entrepreneurs and designers and makers. And this is where you really get to know your people and your clients. And I don't have the opportunity to scrub somebody's hands when they go into a shop. But here I can say, come, let me scrub your hands. Because once their hands are full of sugar, they have to listen to me because I hold the jug of water.
It's a good strategy. I wondered about the sugar. Now, how's your distribution going? I mean, I would think that lockdown would be pretty good for you because people got very, very scared of going into salons. People got very scared of going in to have treatments done. So there's been a lot of sort of personal DIY. Has it been good for you?
Yes, absolutely. You know, lockdown was very scary in the beginning and I never used to give my online shop any attention. It was like a nice to have. But suddenly none of my shops ordered because they were all closed. So we had to give all of our attention to the online shop. And that has really carried us through last year. But it was amazing to, as the shops open up, you know, it was It was awesome to see the shops just coming back and ordering, and the people that's at home, you know, it was, there was a time that in the very beginning, we could not even send our stuff because it was not allowed.
No.
And the only thing that I could send was my hand wash because that was an essential. But nobody ordered my hand wash at that stage.
Absolutely petrifying. You could have said, but it's got essential oils in it. Anyway, I'm not sure anybody would have fallen for that. But listen, it's a lovely story, Marlies. Thank you very much for sharing it with us this evening. The founder of Miss Body Products, body and skincare products, Marlies Wallace this evening. Miss is the name of the brand, M-I-E-S, on The Money Show, on our Friday file. In a moment, we'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz. We'd love you to come and play with us this evening on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. You need to be paying attention to what's been happening in the world of money and business over the past week. That gives you a better than even chance of getting some answers right. So give us a call now and see how many you get right. Do you get a pat on the head, or do we send you away to the naughty step to think about your behavior? I don't know which way you're going to go this evening, but I'd love you to play. First question tonight, South Africa's economy contracted last year. It got smaller during 2020. By how much? I just need a number from you and a percentage. So I just need a percentage from you. That's all I want from you. How much smaller was the economy on the 31st of December 2020 compared to the 1st of January 2020? It wasn't bad, as bad as was feared, but it was still pretty awful. The worst year, as I can figure it out, some people say 1946, but I think it probably goes back to 1920, the last time the world had a pandemic. How much smaller did the South African economy get by the end of December 2020 compared to the 1st of January 2020? In a moment. 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Come on and play the Brutal Biz Quiz.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Unpacking data-driven insights and analysis to turn numbers into tangible business solutions at this year's Absa Beyond the Budget Dialogue. Now that's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
702.
Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Robert in Houghton is up first this evening. Robert, how much smaller was the economy at the end of the year relative to the beginning?
Hello, Bruce. 7%.
7% is absolutely correct. Biggest annual growth slump in more than seven decades. Some people are saying 1946. I think we had a double-digit collapse in 1920 during the Spanish flu crisis. A Game, Rhino, and Mass Fresh are owned by whom, Robert?
Oh, no.
That is not the correct answer. Oh, no is not a brand name, Robert.
No, I failed at my first try at the Brutal.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You got the first answer right. You had 100% success rate until the second one. Now you got 50%. Andrew, in Vredehoek this evening, who owns Game, Mass Fresh and Rhino?
I would have a guess, Bruce, Massmart.
That would be absolutely right, Andrew, at Vredehoek in Cape Town. Massmart posted a 1.75 billion rand loss in its first full year. Mitch Slape, the new chief executive, took us through the results, and they're getting rid of Cambridge Foods, Rhino, and Mass Fresh businesses. Reed Hastings founded which business?
Pick and Pay.
No. No, it wasn't. Nice guess, though. Jack Golden founded Pick and Pay. Jack Golden, legendary Jack Golden, founded Pick and Pay and then sold the four stores to Raymond Ackerman, who celebrated his 90th birthday this week, by the way. Jack Golden then went on to found Clicks and then went to go and found a business in Australia called Priceline. So three startups in one lifetime. And he died at the age of 72. He did incredibly well, to Jack Golden. But no, that is not the correct answer. Tabiso in Centurion. Reed Hastings is the co-founder of which business?
I'm stumped. I was going to go Clicks, but yeah, no. I also don't know this one.
It rhymes with Clicks, and it's not local, Tabiso, but thank you very much. It rhymes with Clicks, and it's not local. Peter in Pretoria.
No, Bruce, I'm also not too sure. You say it rhymes with Clicks.
It rhymes with clicks, and it's not local, and it's a big disruptor. I'm being overly nice here. It's a massive disruptor. It's changed the world, Peter, but thank you for playing. 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. It's a fascinating the subject of a book called The No Rules Rules. It's an astonishing business with an astonishing culture, a really tough culture, I think, and a really robust culture, a culture I wish I think we could have in more South African businesses. John in Johannesburg.
Hi.
Yes, John. The business is called?
It's Netflix.
It is Netflix. Absolutely right. Reed Hastings is the founder of Netflix. And Ian Mann, our business book review guy, will be reviewing the book, The No Rules Rules, in our best bits just after Eyewitness News at 7 o'clock. So if you missed that interview, it really is a fabulous discussion with Ian Mann about Netflix. Paul Hanratty is the Sanlam chief executive. Like his predecessor, he is Irish. He worked for a rival insurance company before he joined Sanlam. Where did Paul Hanratty work previously?
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
You're making terribly rude noises, John. Where did Paul Hanratty work before Sanlam?
I don't know the answer. Sorry.
Oh, but thank you for playing. I'm sure this company is sort of a bit irate about the fact that that he left. But Craig in Johannesburg, Paul Hanratty worked where?
I'm going to go for Liberty.
Well, you've made it easier for somebody else, Craig. Thank you for playing. Jeff in Cape Town. Where's Jeff? Jeff, there's Jeff.
Hello.
Jeff in Cape Town.
Old Mutual.
It is Old Mutual. He was made Old Mutual chief executive of Old Mutual South Africa up until 2008, and then he went to long-term savings, and he was a very busy guy within Old Mutual, but he left. He retired in 2016, and he came out of retirement. He came out of retirement, and he then has now been CEO of Sanlam since the middle of last year. Oh, such sad news this week with the death of Peter Matlare. Peter Matlare was chief executive of many entities, including Prime Media Broadcasting, the company that owns this radio station. He was also the chief executive of Tiger Brands. He was also deputy chief executive of Absa Group. But he also ran a state-owned enterprise. Which state-owned enterprise did Peter Matlare run for a while, Jeff?
It was Eskom.
No, he didn't. It's got four letters. And it's in debt. Well, that's about 800 SOEs. That doesn't give you much of a clue. He loved radio. He loved media. He was a legend. Jeff, oh, come on. It was the SABC. No Wizard of Biz quiz tonight. I beat you. I'm a winner. Because you didn't get the answers right. In a moment, we'll bring you the best bits of The Money Show. Do stay tuned. Some fabulous discussions from the week that has been Eyewitness News Time.